Who are you to make their lives bitter in hard bondage? Man shall be ruled by law, not by the will of other men.
Who is this god that I should let your people go?
Aaron, pass down my staff before Pharaoh, that he may see the power of God.
Yes.
In this you shall know that the Lord is...
That's acting. That is acting. Mark Elliott. I didn't say overacting. We'll ask Mark Elliott that question, Wendy. That is a fine question. Mark Elliott joins us right now. He has written some of Hollywood's most telling biographies, Cary Grant, Walt Disney, Clint Eastwood. This time it's Charlton Heston. The book is called Charlton Heston, Hollywood's Last Icon. Mark, help us with that, because Wendy and I were discussing this earlier. Without a doubt, Charlton Heston is one of our finest actors, but you got to admit, sometimes there was some overacting, right?
Well, I guess you could say that. I mean, but let's remember that the Ten Commandments was directed by Cecil B. DeMille, who was the king of overacting direction.
Yes, he was.
Good point.
So, I mean, if you see Heston in Ben-Hur, directed by William Wyler, it's a different form of acting. So, yes, overacting, very big part, very grandiose movie, and directed by DeMille.
And it went with the territory, you're right.
Sure.
So maybe, you know, it wasn't just Charlton Heston doing that. He's taking directions.
Yep. Why did you decide to take on Charlton Heston? What was it about Charlton Heston that brought you to him?
Well, I've always tried to write about the icons of Hollywood, especially if their story hasn't been told properly or completely before. I've always liked Heston as a person, as a performer, and when the NRA stuff happened, it kind of buried everything else in his life, and I really wanted to remind people of who he was. And anybody in Hollywood on screen who has a career for more than 50 years, when the average span of stardom for men is about 8 or 9, for women 4 or 5 at the top. So it's really difficult to discount his impact, his longevity, and his popularity. So he was a perfect candidate for what I like to write about, and spent a couple of years doing it.
His story, both his career story and his life story, kind of take root in Evanston at Northwestern, right? His acting started there, and he met his wife there.
That's right. He originally went to Northwestern for two reasons. First, his mother's family had been going to Northwestern for generations, so it was more or less understood that when the time came for him to go to college, Northwestern would be where he would go. And the second thing is, he was really an athlete. He wanted to play football for Northwestern, but early on, he broke his nose, and you could always see that bump on his face when you see him on the big screen. That's really what turned him away from football, because he was afraid that he would just be mauled over the course of his college career. So he was sitting in a class, I believe it was an English class, and there was a girl in front of him who had beautiful black hair in pigtails, and he decided to pull her pigtails as a way of introducing himself. And that girl, she wasn't thrilled with that gesture. But she was an actress, and because she was taking acting classes, he started taking acting classes. And although she wouldn't talk to him at first, when she ran into a problem interpreting a line in a play, I'm paraphrasing my own book here, I think it's "What should I do? My frog is dead." She went to Heston and asked him for help. And that really began what turned into a 65-year relationship and marriage. She was the only girl that Heston ever went out with, which is, to me, kind of interesting. Yeah.
You know, that's so funny. What a love story. She is still alive, his wife, Lydia?
Yes. Still alive.
Wow.
Mark, is it possible it's the only girl he ever dated because his opener was to pull a girl's hair? Maybe that wasn't the best way to meet women. I'm not telling Charlton Heston how to meet women, but it just seems like a strange first move.
Well, you know, he grew up in the North Woods of Michigan.
Oh.
alone in the woods, really almost in a log cabin. He was very close to his father. His father was a construction worker. And his mother, one day when Heston was 8 years old, took him out of the house, told him to pack a suitcase, took him out of the house, and brought him down south to where her sister was living. Her sister had married a very well-to-do doctor. So his mother was not satisfied living in the woods to a construction fellow. So she told Heston that they were never going home. He was never going to see his father again, his real father. And they were changing his name from John Charles Carter, which was the father's last name, to Charlton Heston, because the man that she was about to remarry's name was Heston. So his whole view of marriage, dating, he never had a chance in this little one-room school he went to meet girls. And in high school, he was very shy and antisocial. So it really wasn't until college that he was able to meet any woman, and he did it as if he were milking a cow, pulling a pigtail.
You know what's interesting about that to me is that this was an era where Hollywood didn't want you to have your own name. They wanted to create a bigger-than-life name, and the name Charlton Heston just sounds like such the product of a Hollywood PR firm, but that was his name coming into Hollywood.
That's right, but nobody in the business ever called him Charlton.
Chuck.
Everybody called him Chuck.
Yeah.
And Chuck Heston was, that's just who he was. The only person who ever called him Charlton was his mother.
That's a beautiful name, really.
Isn't it?
Yeah.
Yeah.
It is.
Yeah. All right, let's do this. We'll take a break, and then we want to discuss so much more with you. Wendy and I, huge fans of Charlton Heston's, and the book that Mark Elliott has put together, a great book, is Charlton Heston, Hollywood's Last Icon. It's available now, Amazon or wherever books are sold. A quick break, and then more discussion about Charlton Heston's life. Stick around, Bill and Wendy, WGN.
Take your stinking paws off me, you damn dirty ape!
If you do a book on tape, Mark, of your book, I want to play Charlton Heston. Is that okay with you?
Sure.
All right. Mark Elliott is with us. That didn't sound legit, but whatever. He's written a book called Charlton Heston, Hollywood's Last Icon. For a long, long time in Hollywood, if you were making an epic, if you were making Ben-Hur or Hercules or Planet of the Apes or the Ten Commandments, the name at the top of your casting list is going to be Charlton Heston. And how come? Why do you think that is?
Well, he was physically very, very suited for those kind of roles. The thing he was least comfortable with and least able to do were romantic parts. And he once noted that, well, Gregory Peck and Cary Grant, Clark Gable, Jimmy Stewart, all of them, maybe I can't do the romantic parts that they can do, but I don't think any of them could play Moses. And I think there's some truth to that. I mean, his strength was character action roles. And, you know, in Hollywood, once you get put into a category, it's very, very difficult to change. And he really didn't try. He was content to be in his comfort zone, which was action as a compelling character.
Let's go back to Planet of the Apes for a minute. That really resurrected the whole science fiction type of genre, didn't it?
That's right. Science fiction in the 50s kind of began to turn into warnings about nuclear war. You know, the scientist at the end of the film, if man doesn't change his ways, all of that, giant creatures from the deep sea awakened by nuclear bombs. There were a couple of exceptions, the War of the Worlds, Invasion of the Body Snatchers, but really, these films in the 50s were the bottom half of double features or Saturday morning films for kids. When the double feature faded away and there was only one movie on a program, science fiction kind of was lost. When Heston got the script for Planet of the Apes, he really loved it. It was based on a novel. And he brought in the fellow from the Twilight Zone, Rod Serling.
Yeah.
You're right. And if you look at the film, it very much resembles a typical Twilight Zone episode. There's an episode where the three pilots on a rocket ship crash, and they think they're on a foreign planet, and they die about a half a mile from the 405 in L.A.
Yeah.
So, I mean, that's kind of a little bit of what Planet of the Apes has. And there were three or four Twilight Zones that resembled the film. But he got it made, and he was convinced that this film would resonate with audiences. And he was 100% right. It put him back on the top of the Hollywood list, where he had kind of gotten lost a little bit in some of his post-Ben-Hur epics. And it also comes before 2001, another film that has a lot of ape characters in it. And 2001 is a film about everything in the world, whatever you can figure out it's about. Planet of the Apes is about nothing except pure entertainment, and he saw that. And that film was, to that point, in relation to the budget, the biggest film he had ever had. And as you see, it's still spawning sequels. They're still going strong 40 years later. People just love that genre.
Wasn't his last film Tim Burton's remake of Planet of the Apes? I know he just had a cameo. He was on a scene, but that was his last film, wasn't it?
I believe so. He made one other film that was never released here. It just didn't go anywhere, but he did make a cameo in it. I mean, they tried every time they made an apes film to get him in it. But when he did the sequel, I think Beneath the Planet of the Apes, he had it written into his contract that his character would be killed off, so he would never be able to be in them again. Hmm. But he did do that one, and, you know, by then, he really wasn't working as much. He wasn't in demand as much. And so he did it, and he was happy he did. He never regretted anything he did in film or off the screen.
Mark, people always think of his politics as being extreme right wing. He was the president of the NRA, but his politics were kind of all over the board. He was a big champion of equal rights, wasn't he?
That's right. You know, he was a big supporter of JFK in 1960 in the election. And in 1963, he led the Hollywood group, the Hollywood committee that marched alongside Martin Luther King. It was Heston, Harry Belafonte, Marlon Brando, and one or two others. Of course, Brando wanted to chain himself to the Lincoln Memorial, and it was Heston who said, I don't think that's a good idea. I think we should just march and not do any of that stuff.
Yeah.
So that was Brando, and that was Heston.
All right, now we could have at one point had President Charlton Heston. Tell us about his approach to run for president. How many times?
I think three or four times, Senate, governor, and president. He always turned those offers down. You know, he was mentored by Ronald Reagan into the Screen Actors Guild and put on the board of governors and board of directors. And a few years after Reagan left entertainment, Heston became the president of the Screen Actors Guild, which has always been seen as a springboard into politics. George Murphy was the head of the Screen Actors Guild. He became governor of California. So they were always approaching him, and they all thought, since he was a few years younger than Reagan, that when Reagan finished his 8 years, that Heston would be the natural person to follow. But, you know, the difference between Reagan and Heston was Reagan was a politician who loved to act. Heston was an actor who was interested in politics. So when they came to him and they asked him, he always had the same answer. He couldn't afford the pay cut. And that's what he always said. And also, you know, after 8 years, even if you make it that far, where do you go? Your career is over. If you're the former president of the United States, let's say, can you go back and do Planet of the Apes 5? I don't think so.
Maybe not.
So, you know, so I think he was right in that choice. If he were not so impassioned and devoted to acting in theater on screen, maybe. But that's where he really wanted to be, and that's where he stayed.
Mark, as much as I like documentarian Michael Moore's work, he interviewed Charlton Heston toward the end of his life. He was doing a documentary about guns, and he went and he kind of ambushed Charlton Heston to some extent. And then we found out later that Charlton Heston wasn't as sound as we had hoped, that he was experiencing a little bit of dementia. Was he aware of what was going on during that interview? Do you know? Do you know much about that?
Yeah, I do. Michael Moore, who I also like, but I think completely went over the journalistic line here, joined the NRA so that he could say that when he went to Heston's house. Heston was already in the beginning throes of what would become full-blown Alzheimer's. And the ambush, I think it speaks for itself. Anybody who sees it can readily see that this was not pre-planned by Heston. But because he was who he was, he came out for the interview. He was always accessible. And when it started to go very bad, he didn't yell back. He didn't get angry. He got up and walked away. So maintaining his dignity is something that he always did, almost always. And I think that is very clear in that interview, that it was wrong-headed, over the line, and that Heston maintained his dignity.
Mark, you did a fantastic job with the book, and it's so much fun to talk to you. I highly recommend this book. It's Charlton Heston, Hollywood's Last Icon. The author is Mark Elliott. Keep up the good work. What are you working on next, Mark?
I've got two things coming. I'm not sure what order, but there will be more in the same vein. And, hey, I really appreciate talking to you, both of you. It's really enjoyable for me.
Thank you, sir.
Thank you. And keep us posted on your new projects. We'd love to talk to you again.
Definitely.
That's Mark Elliott, everybody. We'll take a quick break, then some news, then more show. Bill and Wendy, WGN.